From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this quick look at local and statewide news. Tlingit culture bearer and leader Kingiste, David Katsik, died suddenly last night. Katsik was a clan leader of the Shangukedi, the first president of Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation, and an educator who championed Tlingit culture and language.
Thanking another person is accepting the gift that was given, which means we become responsible. That's the word for kunashish. We are receiving a gift that we didn't earn. It was given to us, like our language.
That's Katsik speaking at the Sharing Our Knowledge conference in Juneau last year. He was born in Klukwan in 1942, but spent most of his life in Juneau. He helped establish the first celebration in 1982. The biennial event in Juneau now draws thousands of Native people from Southeast Alaska and beyond for a multi-day cultural exchange. Katsik started working with the Juneau School District in the 90s. He provided decades of vision and support for Tlingit culture, language, literacy programs, and helped develop K-12 curriculum in a variety of subjects. In a Facebook post from Sea Alaska Heritage, Katsik's clan nephew, Ricardo Worrell, wrote that Katsik's passing leaves an unimaginable void for our culture and traditional leadership. Worrell said that while the pandemic impedes customs for grieving and memorial services, they will find a way to honor Katsik in a safe manner. And while the pandemic put a damper on many holidays this year, determined Juneauites are finding creative ways to celebrate Halloween. The city and borough of Juneau recommends families avoid parties, haunted houses, and door-to-door trick-or-treating this year. Most of those are already canceled. The CDC has a guide for how to celebrate Halloween safely. It encourages outdoor activities, masks, frequent hand-washing, and social distancing. And even with those measures, trick-or-treating is considered a moderate-risk activity. That's the sound of candy sliding down a makeshift chute at a home in downtown Juneau. People have rigged up contraptions all over town to deliver candy while staying socially distant. Even the Flats neighborhood, which usually attracts hundreds of trick-or-treaters from all over town, will be quiet. A few households may still hand out candy, but many plan to sit this year out. In the Mendenhall Valley, parents have organized a trunk-or-treat event at the Mendenhall Mall parking lot on Saturday afternoon. Deborah Clements said they found about 30 volunteers willing to stage their cars with trunks full of goodie bags. She says trick-or-treaters will stay distanced in their bubbles. Masks are required for anyone over two.
We're going to do nauseating amounts of mitigation as far as people roaming with extra hand sanitizer. We're going to have a tent set up where people have to come and at least sign up with a representative's name and phone number just in case we need any quick contact tracing.
There's also a Halloween car parade Saturday afternoon that will weave through different parts of town and deliver candy. Trick-or-treating has been rare in Douglas for decades, with most families opting for the drier indoor ghost walk at Mount Jumbo Gym. With this year's event canceled, Melissa Griffith saw an opportunity to revive trick-or-treating in a safe way. She posted a form for people to fill out if they plan to trick-or-treat with kids or if they would like to hand out candy with the expectation that people observe safety rules. She'll turn the responses into a map.
It's definitely my goal that it becomes a thing again in Douglas. And I think there's a chance for that this year if it goes well. And it's looking promising. It just took a global pandemic.
This is her third year putting together the trick-or-treat map, and Griffith says the response has been double what she's seen in the past. For those hoping to remain in their bubbles, the Gold Town Nickelodeon and City Parks and Recreation Department have organized drive-in movies at Sandy Beach on Halloween. Everyone is required to stay in their cars. Family-friendly movie The Addams Family will show at 6 p.m., and Poltergeist will play at 9:30 p.m., and Gold Town Nick is even putting on its annual Rocky Horror Picture Show performance at Eagle Crest Ski Area on Friday and Saturday. And more than a dozen candidates for the Alaska Legislature gathered for a virtual forum last week on racial equity. The event was hosted by a loosely organized group of activists, and while it drew robust participation from one side of the political spectrum, none of the dozens of invited Republican candidates agreed to appear. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has more on this partisan split.
Earlier this month, E.J. David and a few other people joined with an Alaska Native advocacy group, First Alaskans Institute, to organize a legislative candidate forum centered around Black, Indigenous, and People of Color, or BIPOC. David, a university professor of Filipino descent, says those issues are not often discussed in mainstream debate.
And so we just really wanted to see, you know, when it gets to these specific issues that communities of color care about, where do these candidates stand?
The invitation to the two-hour forum went out 6 days in advance, which isn't a ton of time this late in campaign season. 18 candidates ended up participating. All were either Democrats or independents. None of the three dozen invited Republicans accepted the invitation. Some had scheduling conflicts, but others who David wouldn't name gave other reasons, including that systemic oppression is not a problem. David says he wasn't surprised, but he was deeply disappointed.
Because, you know, whether people of color deserve to get access to quality and affordable healthcare, that's not a partisan issue. The question of whether Black Lives Matter, that shouldn't be a partisan issue.
David says he thinks it's interesting that there was such a clear contrast between those who showed up and those who didn't. Alaska Republican Party officials didn't respond to requests for comment, but one state senator who did was Josh Rivak, an Anchorage Republican.
When you have, you know, a whole group of sponsors, and this is just the way it was explained to me, that are only advocating for folks on the left, I don't think that's a real conversation. It's certainly not a real bipartisan one, you know?
Rivek says he had another commitment the night of the forum and that he would have been open to participating. But he also took issue with a section of the invitation that said by accepting, candidates acknowledged the importance of discussing racial inequity and systemic oppression and that leaders should be working to fight them.
Who couldn't agree with that, right? But it sure sounds kind of leading. It's not like, hey, let's come hear your ideas of how we're going to solve racial inequality or you know, that it's like, here's what you believe right now by signing this.
David, one of the organizers, says he's not registered with a party and that the questions posed to the candidates were not set up to be softballs for Democrats or independents. Several of those who participated gave a thumbs down or refused to answer when asked if they supported defunding the police and investing money in tribal programs and other alternatives.
We did not care if the questions made the candidates feel uncomfortable and awkward, because it's time. It's time that we get down to addressing these awkward, difficult issues.
David and the other organizers are planning one more BIPOC forum this weekend for Alaska's federal congressional candidates. So far, only Democratic-endorsed independent U.S. Senate hopeful Al Gross has confirmed. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
And the city and borough of Juneau announced 26 new COVID-19 cases among Juneau residents. 11 are part of a new cluster of employees at the Mendenhall Auto Center, which closed to the public earlier this week. According to a city media release, half of the business's 65 employees have been tested, and the other half will be tested today. The state's Division of Public Health believes the risk to people who visited the auto center is low because the business closed quickly. Statewide, the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services reported 355 new people with COVID-19 and 6 more deaths, including a woman from Fairbanks, another from the Prince of Wales, Hyder Census Area, 3 people from Anchorage, and a man who died out of state. And Governor Mike Dunleavy says obsolete technology has prevented the state government from distributing additional money to Alaskans who are unemployed due to COVID-19.
We're having a problem with it. It's outdated, it's outmoded, and in the manner that the feds want us to distribute the money, it's not working with the system.
Dunleavy said during a news conference on Wednesday that the state is aiming to have an answer to the problem by the end of the week. Dunleavy announced the state plan for the money in August, shortly after President Trump announced the program, but residents are still waiting for the payments. The Lost Wages Assistance Program is intended to pay up to $300 per week for a 6-week period for a total of $1,800 on top of regular unemployment insurance payments. Alaska's congressional delegation and governor are welcoming the Trump administration's decision to fully exempt the Tongass National Forest from a Clinton-era roadless rule. That's a federal regulation that generally restricts road building and industrial activity on national forest lands that don't already have them. Industry figures are also applauding the decision. Tessa Axelson leads the Alaska Forest Association, a Ketchikan-based timber industry group.
The forest products industry has been imperiled for some time. There's a handful of small operators that are working in the Tongass, harvesting timber. In order to continue to survive, those businesses are dependent on a predictable supply of timber.
And lifting the rule, she says, provides that predictable supply. She says the industry supports hundreds of jobs, including businesses that aren't directly related to logging. But she says she doesn't think lifting the rule will mean large-scale timber operations will come roaring back.
We have no belief that that level of operation in the Tongass will occur again.
The U.S. Forest Service says lifting the roadless rule would open up about 168,000 old-growth acres to potential logging. That's about 2% of the area protected by the rule, or 1% of the total Tongass. But it's not just about timber. Frank Birdstrom is a mining consultant in Juneau with some 40 years of experience. He says it could make mineral exploration more attractive to investors.
There's no roadmap to these things. It just maybe it'll lead to a little more optimism.
But he says development projects still require other forms of federal review.
This is one obstacle that has at least been diminished, but there's a long road to hoe.
Roadless rule supporters dispute that it held up economic development in the region. The Forest Service routinely approved waivers for energy, mining, and infrastructure projects in designated roadless areas, says Austin Williams of Trout Unlimited in Anchorage.
The only reason for a full repeal of the roadless rule on the Tongass is to open up areas for logging. Every single other alternative would have allowed non-logging projects to move forward as they have in the past.
The public comments received inside and outside Alaska were overwhelmingly in support of keeping the rule. A Freedom of Information Act request from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council found that 96% of public comments from within and outside Alaska favored keeping the rule in place. Executive Director Meredith Trainer says it was pretty overwhelming.
Just 1% of the total responses out of 15,000 that they looked at, that they analyzed, just 1% wanted to see a total exemption from the Tongass.
Supporters also live in some of the wildest places around Tongass. Tribal leaders say people forage, hunt, and fish in protected lands.
Of course, our reliance on the Tongass for our way of life, that is what we're trying to protect as natives in Southeast Alaska, is our way of life.
That's Joel Jackson, president of the Organized Village of Cake on Southeast Alaska's Kuprianoff Island. His was the first of half a dozen tribes to withdraw its cooperation with the Forest Service. He says it became clear early on that their voices weren't being listened to.
They just completely ignored our input and the input of the other five tribes. So I felt very disrespected.
Ken Raitt is project director at the Pew Charitable Trusts, and he helped push for the original 2001 roadless rule. He says the federal government has downplayed the temperate rainforest's value as a carbon sink as the effects of climate change worsen. And he says that because federal timber sales are a loss for federal taxpayers, economic arguments don't add up.
This decision has no basis in science. It has no basis in rational kind of fiscal policy. And it has no basis insofar as public support.
The Trump administration's decision could be reversed through a court challenge or an act of Congress. Alternatively, another presidential administration could revisit the rule, but that would require public comment, meetings, and another multi-year process. But until then, some 9.4 million acres in the Tongass are no longer bound by the restrictions under the Clinton-era roadless rule. That's it from the KTOO Newsroom. Thanks for tuning in.